Hello, everyone. Welcome to the BAM Comic Podcast. This is a message from the future. Stu and I, hello, Stu.
Hello.
I've noticed that a lot of you have gone right back to the start and started downloading earlier episodes of BAM, which is fine. We just wanted to put it out there. It does get a lot better. Those first ones are a little rough, as you'll hear if you listen to it. We've got new equipment since then, and we've kind of eased into it a bit more. So thank you for downloading, but if this doesn't quite hit the mark, try one of the later ones. They're all really good.
Exactly. Don't judge us by this. If you insist on listening to the first one, that's cool, as Neil said, but maybe download the latest episode as well.
Which will be completely relevant, because yes, we put content out so regularly. Honest, we do.
We do.
You'll find out. Subscribe. Subscribe! Yeah, thanks. Here's the first BAM. Have a listen to this.
Bye.
Bye. Welcome to BAM Comics. BAM? Pronounced like that?
BAM, yeah, I think so. As in comic sound effects.
BAM.
BAM.
BAM. Alright, welcome to issue 1, volume 1 of BAM Comics, nice. A comic podcast from me, Neil, and you, Stu. Say hello, Stu.
Hello, hello, Stu.
Hello, Stu, there we go. We have decided to make a comic podcast because we are the best.
I think so.
We're the best at comics.
Definitely. Between the two of us, we're definitely the best.
A force comics to be reckoned with. We spend a lot of time and money going through comics. And we've bored everyone else, so now it's our turn to bore you in this very first issue. BAM!
BAM!
BAM! All right, coming up, we will have the reading file, which will be what me and Stu are reading just now. We're going to tell you about that. Then Stu's got the Sinister Society of Stupid. Tell us about that, Stuart.
So this will be what we hope will be a regular feature, where I will go through real supervillains at the moment. We may look at superheroes as well, but basically really lame supervillains that probably aren't around at the moment because they are so stupid. So we're going to go and do a profile each issue of the podcast, and then we can basically put it to the vote over Twitter at the end of our first series. We're being really ambitious, we're expecting to be running more than one episode.
Of course we will.
Get some feedback from you guys on who is the lamest. And the lamest one will get to be a member of the Sinister Society of Stupid.
Lucky them.
It's good, isn't it?
Lucky them.
Yeah.
After that, we will have Stu's Stash, where we rummage through your considerable stash of comics, some of which are very, very valuable. You can tell us about some of the gems in there and whether you would ever part with them for human money.
Well, yes. I mean, you got me a bit nervous there, like parting with them.
It's not it's not legally binding.
Okay, good.
I can tell that you're nervous.
Oh, I'm a bit nervous.
You're nervous about... I'm not going to take your comics from you.
Okay.
I might. No.
You sure?
No, I'm not going to. Then we're going to go into Ant-Man because that's a new comic book movie. What is out just now? All right. Let's kick off with the reading file. All right. Start us off. Stu, what are you reading just now?
So I'm reading a ridiculous amount, but I'm going to pick out one title that I was particularly surprised about. So at the moment we've got Marvel doing their Secret Wars big, you know, wide, company-wide event. Apparently it's not a reboot, so it's going to basically a refresh of the Marvel Universe. Spinning out of the limited series, they're doing special Secret Wars mini-series. And one in particular I've picked out is Thor's, with an S on the end.
Thor's plural.
Thor's plural. The idea of this, with the whole Secret Wars, is it's kind of like a parallel universes or alternate interpretation of the characters. It's one of those things where you know that all of this stuff will be done and dusted in about 6 months. It'll be back to regular continuity. But it's an opportunity to see different takes on characters. So you've got Planet Hulks, which is Captain America as a kind of Roman-style gladiator, wandering through a radioactive wasteland full of Hulks.
Crumbs.
Trying to track down his best mate, Bucky.
Who presumably is also going to be a Hulk.
Well, I don't know. You might have spoiled. Might be the end of the.
Shit. Sorry. Sorry.
So anyway, so you've got loads of little different interpretations, most of which I think are a bit, you know, flash in the pan. But Thor's, on the other hand, for me was a real surprise. So the reason being, in the Secret Wars universe, the Thor Corps, it rhymes, sort of. So the Thor Corps, who are basically loads of different Thors. All the Thors. So you've got like your regular Thor that you probably all know from the movie, and they're kind of like Viking-style god. You've got Storm from the X-Men as a Thor.
Oh, okay.
You've got the new female Thor. You've got... It goes back through the heritage of the comics. You've got, like, the Frog Thor from the 80s.
Crunch. Which, that's a new one on me.
Yeah, that's a whole new podcast, I think. And Beta Ray Bill, who's this chap on the cover of issue one.
So he has a horse-like face.
Yeah, and that's my era. I mean, in the early 80s he was introduced, and that, for me, was, like, the start of the definitive Thor years by Walt Simonson.
Why has he got a horse like... He sort of looks like regular Thor, but with those novel horse masks. Why?
So he's an alien.
Right. That explains it.
Yeah, obviously. And this was... Up until that point, I think Thor was the only one who could hold the hammer. Yeah, he was the only one who's worthy.
Okay.
So they kind of... Back in the early 80s... We are going to go down this road, aren't we? We're going to talk about it.
I guess so.
Back in the early 80s, Thor, the comic, was kind of a bit tired. You know, no one was rereading it.
Mm-hmm.
And so a chap called Walt Simonson, a writer and artist, came on board and was pretty much given carte blanche to kind of give it a kick up the arse, which he did, because the very first issue had this chap, Beta Ray Bill, on the cover, wielding Mjolnir.
Is that how it's pronounced?
Do you know what? I only ever knew how to pronounce it until the movie came out. Up to that point, I was like, Mjolnir.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow, like the movie.
Mighty meow, meow.
So wait, once again, how is it pronounced?
Mjolnir. Someone's probably going to Twitter in the game. No, I think you find it's pronounced this way.
They can.
But I think it's Mjolnir. Anyway, let's not ever pronounce that again.
Okay.
So yes, anyway, back to Thors. So you've got all these different types of Thors. And in the Secret Wars universe, they are kind of like the police force working for Doom, Dr. Doom, who's the god of this Secret Wars world.
Hold on a minute.
Yeah.
So all the Thors are like the police.
Technically, yeah.
So there's a police force comprised only of Thors.
Yes.
And they all work for Dr. Doom, who is in charge of this battle world.
Yes, but he's technically god. Because in this world, everyone doesn't... No one remembers, or only a few people remember, what the Marvel Universe was like beforehand. So this Secret Wars world is literally a patchwork world of different domains ruled over by regents. It's a bit Game of Thrones, I thought, when I read the setup for it. So
okay.
So you've got, like... So S.H.I.E.L.D., as we know, this kind of task force.
Yeah.
S.H.I.E.L.D. in this universe are kind of protecting something called the Wall, which, again...
Bit Games of Thrones, yeah.
And on the other side of this wall, you've got like the zombie versions of the Marvel characters.
Oh, so they're still flopping about.
Yeah, and you've got Ultrons, loads of Ultrons on this other side of this wall.
Okay.
And so Doom is God. You know, he created the world, and everyone just thinks he's God, and he's the All-Father, as they call him.
Okay.
So, yeah, so each region is a domain unto itself, is what the taglines say. So the Thors keep the peace.
Presumably by smashing folk in the face with hammers.
Yeah.
Right.
A bit of lightning up the jacksie.
Right.
Yeah. So, yes. So, in the Thor's miniseries, they kind of focus on a group of the most recognisable Thors. So, you've got
generic Thor.
Your generic Thor.
Women Thor.
Yeah. And you've got the Destroyer, which is a big robot-y type thing.
Yeah, he was in the movie. I know him.
And it focuses on the relationship between the kind of a classic Thor, who's called the Ultimate Thor in this.
Wow.
And Beta Ray Bill, who's Horseface Dude.
Horseface Dude.
And they're investigating a murder.
Ooh.
I don't want to say who it is, because that's kind of like the... I think that's the twist in the first issue. But it's basically... They're trying to track down a serial killer who's killing the same person, but in...
Because in multiples of the battle.
Yeah,
because
there's different types. There's different versions of them. So, I don't know, it's basically it's a procedural police drama, and I just thought that was quite surprising. I remember I picked it up and thought, actually, that's different.
Okay, so I'm envisaging Taggart, but for Vikings.
Yeah, so if you take away the Scots Brogue and just having
right.
a few Verilies and the Envy.
So more like CSI yeah. but with Vikings.
Yeah, so you know, it's really good. I mean, you know, I'm flicking through it now. The artwork from Chris Sprouse, I think, is quite nice and clean. It's got, you know, quite dramatic interpretations. Like I say, it starts off with this, them investigating a murder, and you get to see a bit more of the realms in the Secret Wars patchwork planet.
And it's got a frog Thor, which frog if you weren't Thor. Alive in the 80s, yeah. that's a hell of a thing to see.
Yeah, he was kind of like the medical expert on it, so you've got him here, see him here wearing a white lab coat, which I think is
cool. Of course. Why not? Okay, so that's pretty outlandish.
Yes.
So you've got obviously quite an extensive knowledge of Thor's...
too much.
Is it too much? Like, would casual readers be able to get into this?
I think so. Which depends. If you... I think, yeah, out of all of them, I think it's one that you can easily pick up. Mm. But bear in mind, if you are picking it up, you are going to be expected to kind of have an understanding of what Secret Wars is. I think if it's someone who comes off the back of watching the movie, they're going to sort of go, what the hell is this? So it's not recommended for that. But if you are reading Secret Wars and you're put off by the ridiculous number of titles that are coming out of it, a lot of which are a bit shy, I'll be honest. Thor's is something that I would definitely recommend out of all of them. Because I've bought most of the spin-offs and I've given up after a couple of issues, but Thor's is the one I think is...
I like the idea of an award just a bit shite.
A bit shite.
Stu's a bit shite award.
Yeah, well, there you go. Maybe that we'll do that for the end of series.
So, not so much the people that have just watched the Marvel films, but if you're used to comics in general... Or if you're a big
sorry, I got you. No, if you're reading Marvel and you've got a familiarity with the history, then yeah, definitely. Right. But if you're coming off the back of the movies, give that and Secret Wars a wide berth, I guess, because you're just going to be...
Not having knowledge might be a bit of a Thor spot.
Oh, dear, we're going to go there. What's that, 10 minutes in we've done Fritzel. That? Yes.
All
right. There you go.
All right, I am going to talk about the Lando comic.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I know that you and I have been well reading the other Star Wars ones.
Yes.
Didn't really stick with the Star Wars one. It was all right.
Okay.
The Darth Vader one, I know we're both big fans of. I think that's been probably the best out of the run so far.
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. Head and shoulders above it already.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice that they all tie together. Like, if you're collecting it as a series, like, it crosses over now and again, and you'll only get certain references that, you know, you're privy to from reading other issues. But along comes Lando.
Right.
Perhaps an underrepresented character in the Star Wars universe. Got a bit of a bum deal from the movies, I think.
Well, how much screen time did he actually have? I mean, what, you wrapped up towards the last third of Empire?
Yeah, not much.
Yeah.
Not much. I mean, he looks sweet as in a cape.
And a lot of people would say he's one of their favourite characters, right? But
I've never heard of anyone refer to Lando.
Well, I've had a few people. Obviously, everyone says Boba Fett, right?
Yeah. No, I always think he got a bit of a bum deal. I think he's one of the more interesting characters in Star Wars. He got a rough time in the movie because, you know, he came in as... Billy Dee came in as, like... People said he was, like, a shoehorned black talent for the universe, which was a bit unfair because he was a respected actor back then. If anything, he brought gravitas.
I think so.
And then immediately he was cast into a sort of Judas role, which wasn't easy.
Yeah.
But he clawed it back big time in Jedi.
I'm trying to think, apart from, you know, the final part of Jedi when he's piloting the Millennium Falcon, did he do any... Oh, no, of course he was at the beginning.
He had that sweet disguise in Jabba's palace.
Of course he did. Skiffguard, whatever it was, and he kind of...
Yeah, okay, no, he
did have a bit. Okay, I thought he had less of an appearance or less of a presence in those movies.
So, yeah, he's a complex character. And then now we've got him in his own miniseries, which I think is potentially quite interesting for the Star Wars universe. I know there's a Chewbacca one on the horizon. Not sure how that's going to work.
Well, if they can do a Groot comic, they can probably do a Chewie comic.
Just panel one. Just pages upon pages of that. No, but I like it. There's things that I like. It's basically set up like a heist movie.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Lando is perhaps even more roguish than Han Solo. They used to knock about together and get into scrapes. So this is Lando. Sorry, I'm banging my keys. This is Lando on a heist to make some credits. Because why not? Needs one big score.
Exactly.
It kind of feels like Ocean's 11 in space.
And actually, all the Star Wars comics that are coming out from Marvel now are set right after the original first movie, aren't they?
Yeah, pre-Empire.
So is Lando pre-Empire? Or?
This is before he becomes... allow me to flex my Star Wars muscle here. This is before he becomes Baron Administrator of Cloud City.
Right.
Which I believe he wins in a card game.
Okay.
So it's before he has all that responsibility. So he's a bit more of a rogue. He is seducing all the space ladies. A bit pretty much like Shatner, really.
Yeah.
Shatner with a sweet mustache and a cape. So he's getting on. There's bits I like. I'd love the idea of like doing a heist movie in Star Wars. That's really cool. He's the excellent choice for that. They've also cast his longtime silent buddy Lobot. Do you remember Lobot?
He's the bald-headed guy with the funny
headphones thing. Yeah, so he is a self-made android that has all this computer stuff built into his brain so he can integrate himself with computer systems more. He was always like a silent figure, again, like Boba Fett. But in this one, they've given him a personality. He's a bit whiny.
Okay.
I would just have preferred if he just never talked. They go into a little bit and explain that it was all some imperial operation to have this. He was like a test subject.
Right.
And they've given him a voice to make him whiny. I'd rather he just stayed stoic and quiet. I think Lobot had
like
a bit
it was
of,
in the movie.
Yeah. He had a bit of mystery there. But now he's just like, Lando. I don't think we should do this. And you're like, you've lost me a bit there. What we've gained with Lando, we've lost with Lobot.
Poor Lobot.
I know, but they're busy mates.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see that at least they have this relationship before Cloud City. So I'm kind of curious as to how it goes. Really good first issue. Ends on quite the sucker punch cliffhanger.
Right.
So that's highly recommended.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Because you obviously said about we think that Darth Vader is probably the best one.
Yeah, definitely.
You also killed the main Star Wars one?
No, it just lost it very quickly for me. I just lost interest. I think the problem with that one is maybe it started too much with a bang. I'll probably wait till it's collected and get it that way. But Darth Vader, I'm enjoying issue by issue. I know Princess Leia's got one as well. Which
that's
was good.
Probably the weakest one I thought.
You think so?
Yeah. It's great artwork, but
I don't know.
It doesn't really work for me.
No, I mean I like that they've properly ramped up the factor of her just being really sassy and her own heroine and her whole arc's like going to try and find everyone that's possibly left from Alderaan ever. Like I like that. It's got direction, but after being a bit disappointed by Star Wars, I'm going to wait till that's collected, maybe. But no, I really like Darth. Can't not read it in the Darth Vader voice.
Yeah, that's been pretty, really, really clever. There's been some nice little nods to the original movie, stuff that...
Yeah.
We won't spoil it, but I think there's a few things in the first couple of issues where you were like, that's really clever. They've linked back to the movie and there's bits that...
Like other people's lines coming out of different people's mouths. Yeah, it's got a lot of in knowledge. I mean, not that you have to know Star Wars that well. It's not that super cliquey.
But it just feels real. It just feels like it could have... This is the stuff that could have happened after.
Yeah, I mean, if you're buying a Star Wars comic, I'm going to guess that you've got a pretty... robust working knowledge of Star Wars anyway.
Yeah.
So you're going to enjoy that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Now for one that we're both reading.
Is it going to be what I think it's going to be?
Well, I hope so.
This could be very awkward.
It would be.
But I'm going to just pick this up from the pile in front of me and wave it in your general direction. Am I correct?
You are correct in thinking that we are now going to talk about the Fight Club 2.
Yeah.
Did you ever want to see a sequel to Fight Club?
So, Yeah, the first thing I saw was the movie. I remember being blown away by it, and then going and buying the book and reading the book, and being pleasantly surprised how close to the book the movie was. There's very few minor things I remember that were slightly different, but generally it was like...
I'm going to say it's one of those rare books where the movie has a better ending.
Yeah, I agree with that. Actually, yeah, good point. I do remember the ending of the book was a bit pish.
Bit pish. That's another potential award. Steve's bit pish award. So yeah, Chuckers is back.
Yeah, that's surprising, isn't it? Yeah, he's done a sequel, and rather than doing it as a novel, he's decided to go the graphic arts route.
Indeed. So anyway, for one reason or another, we have a Fight Club 2, the official sequel to Fight Club, picking up some 10 years after where the movie left off.
Yes. Now, yeah, so it picks up. Did the character, the main character was never given a name, was he?
He's never given a name, so that's the first thing off the bat, is he now has a name.
Yeah, so he's now called Sebastian. Or they just say, you know, he calls himself Sebastian these days.
Yeah, which could mean anything.
Yeah, and he's married to...
Marla.
And they have a son, a young son, and...
It's kind of fallen back into his old habits, really.
Yeah, mundane.
Mundane existence, very heavily medicated to stop the Tyler Durden hallucinations.
Yeah, Marla's still going to inappropriate support groups to kind of just get her jollies out of. So she's rocking up at sickle cell counselling groups, you know. So still got that kind of like dark humour and...
Yeah, she's still the same... They're both still the same characters. I just didn't ever expect them to fall back into their old tricks. But I suppose they had a kid together and that's what keeps them together.
Yep.
To an extent. But it's not going so well.
No, so Tyler Durden does turn up. Again, you know, we don't really want to give away too much.
But it wouldn't be Fight Club without Tyler Durden.
Exactly, so he's in it and his... presence and how he's there is a nice little twist. I don't think you get that until issue 2 anyway, I think. How he's come back.
It was nicely done. It was very nicely done. But overall, I'm still not convinced that we need a sequel to Fight Club.
I'm still on the fence of it. I'm enjoying it.
It really plays with the panels well. Like it's gone in with quite a deliberate, this is how comic book works. These are how comic book works, and we know exactly how to mess with that, much like how we imagine, I suppose, Tyler Durden would mess with such an art form. Exactly. Yeah, well, mind is better, So I like that.
What I was surprised about is how well it reads as a comic, for the reasons you just said. I mean, this is a guy who, as far as I know, hasn't written any comics before, and has come from a different art form. And I remember reading, so Kevin Smith, as we know, film auteur. He's a bit Marmite, as far as I'm concerned. I'm going to put it out there.
That's fair. I'm a fan, but I know not everyone is.
Yeah, and I remember he wrote Daredevil. For Marvel, kind of reinvented Daredevil, and I remember being quite excited about the prospect.
Yeah.
So I love Chasing Amy. I think that's the best film he's ever done. Dogma, meh.
Ooh, okay.
Lots of good ideas, but a bit self-congratulating, aren't we clever kind of moment.
Right.
That's another award we can do, the aren't we clever, sarcastic.
Just a sarcastic hand clap.
Yeah. So anyway, so Kevin Smith wrote Daredevil for Marvel, kind of reinvented it.
Yeah.
I remember getting like the first couple of issues and thinking, God, this guy needs an editor, because it was just reams of text. Like the pages were just full up with text, but text. And it's like, comics are a kind of a visual medium primarily, and I think you need to get that balance right. So point I'm trying to make is, it's coming from a different medium, it's quite hard to transfer, but Chuck Palahniuk, he seems quite a natural, so there's no other people on the credits as far as the writing goes. So I presume he's either a natural or he's got a very good editor. But I like to think, he just gets it. He just gets how to write comics and how to present stuff. That was, for me, was a pleasant surprise. I'm still a bit on the fence.
I'm enjoying it, but I'm finding it's... one issue's good, the next issue will be bad, and so on. So it's like very odd numbers. So one good, one bad, one good, one bad.
Do we know how many issues it's running for?
No, I don't. Obviously, it must be a limited series because I wanted to publish it just as a graphic novel, so it's not going to run and run and run.
I'm going to put it out there and say 5 issues.
Yeah, fair enough. I can see them wrapping it up in 5. Things are escalating nicely.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it'll go to the scale that maybe... Well, then again, I don't suppose Fight Club was always a tease as to how big it could go, so...
Yeah, I'm trying to kind of remember what it was to watch it for the first time.
Yeah.
But yes, anyway, I think I need to watch the movie again. Actually, for the record, you're an issue ahead of me on Fight Club.
I am.
I've only read the first two.
Well, sorry, that means you've got a good one coming up.
Okay, yeah, all right. That's good. So you look forward to it.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so we're both reading that. We're both enjoying it. Give it a whirl.
Yeah.
Okay. Give it a whirl. If you watched Fight Club, which I consider my favourite Christmas movie, because it teaches you all about, you know, the value of material possessions, what's really important in life. If you were ever remotely curious as to what these characters would be doing in 10 years' time, then there it is. It's all for you in Fight Club 2.
You say that. I mean, that's one thing I remember when I read the first book and saw the movie was... It made me quit my job at the time because I was like,
really?
Yeah, it's a true story. It sounds more dramatic than it actually is, but I was just not happy at this particular job. And I was like, the message in the movie, apart from beating each other up, I wasn't up for that.
No.
But the general thing of like, you know, you're not your possessions, you know, you're not your job. I was like, wow, that's really deep, man. So I quit my job. And at the time, the idea of like getting excited over the IKEA catalogue, you know, didn't appeal. So I totally got that. I was like, I'm not my possessions. I remember I scaled down a lot of stuff, even comics, got rid of loads of comics.
Yeah, you're not your comics.
I'm not my comics. And I was living in rented accommodation a lot at that time, so it was kind of, it made sense to not have a lot of crap to carry around.
Yeah.
So I lived by that ethos. I was like, I'm totally like down with this. I'm so edgy. And then it's reading this again, remembering what it was to watch the movie and watch that, and I'm just thinking, I've become...
Are you disappointed? Well, maybe that's the whole point.
I get excited about going to IKEA. It's just genuinely, like, I get excited about going to IKEA. You know, my porn now is exactly what they say in the original book. You know, it used to be, you know, I think there's some kind of phrase that you still back off over, you know, Gurney Mags. Now we get excited about the IKEA catalogue. And at the time, I was like, never happened to me. And now I'm like, I genuinely get excited about looking home furnishings. I'm like, what the?
Do you think that's why he's waited so long then? Like, rather than tap into the same, he's basically appealing to the same people 10 years later. 10 years ago, it was people starting off in their careers, and now we're like 10 years later and we're supposed to be settled down and popping out a family like young Sebastian is. Is he trying to reach out to the same people from 10 years ago?
Well, if his aim is to make people like me feel really bad, then I think he's done really well. It's like,
so we've gone from like recommending Fight Club to say, if you really want to feel bad and that you're wasting your life,
Fuck Chuck Planet. Who does he think he is telling
Thanks,
me how to feel?
Chuck.
We hate this comic. It's rubbish.
Don't even buy it to wipe your bum with it. There we go. That's the other award.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah. It's got us. It's got us hook, line, and sinker. Well done, Chuck. Well done. All right. Up next, it is The Sinister Society of Stupid.
Cue intro music. And we're back. Hopefully the awesome intro music.
It was exceptionally good intro music that I didn't slot in at the very last minute.
Exactly. So...
Tell me about this. What is there an acronym? No, because it's all S's.
It's
so just
the
SOS.
S-O-S with an S before. So SOS.
Catchy. I can see that on a t-shirt.
I love it. Quick recap of the point of this. There are loads of really rubbish villains and heroes, which do make me laugh when I look at some of the older comics I've got.
Mm-hmm.
Some are just completely stupid.
Mm.
Some are politically incorrect, I think, safe to say, you know.
There's going to be a lot of that,
A lot of probably potentially racist characters as well. Loads of these things where you think, at the time, you think, what were they thinking? Now you think,
what were they thinking?
So each issue or each the podcast, we're going to look at one character.
Mm-hmm.
And the view is at the end of our series, however that long it's going to be, one apparently, I think, one episode, we'll ask you guys to kind of contact us on Twitter and let us know who you think should be an honorary member
of the Sinister
So we want to try and choose one per series to kind of be it.
Right.
That's it. It's, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It's just, I think the idea for me is if we can raise the profile for a lame-ass character, and who knows, maybe Marvel, DC, or whoever will then go, hey,
this for a,
yeah, let's do a revival. Let's see if we can make this character not lame.
All right, who is our first candidate?
I'm going to start off quite easy, I think, with this one.
Right.
Because he actually has been appearing relatively recently. They've managed to kind of bring him back. So this character is a villain from the Marvel Universe.
Okay.
It's an Ant-Man villain, and I think the good reason I'm doing that is because we're going to talk about...
Young Ant-Man
mm-hmm. in a couple of guises. So this character, his real name is Elias Starr, with two R's.
Okay.
And his supervillain alias is Egghead.
So already bores me.
Already. Yeah. So he's got no superpowers. He is just a bald guy in a lab coat. So, Egghead. At the time in the 60s, you know, that was a kind of an insult. People who were quite intelligent, you know. Oh, he's an egghead.
Oh, because of course back in the 60s, you should have been taking her drugs and reading the comics.
Yeah. Well, actually, no, I'm saying this. When he was created, I think this is pre-Summer
of Love.
Probably, I think so.
Wow.
62, 63, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, it's not a term that's used now.
Hey, egghead.
Hey, egghead.
That's not going to...
No.
Like, what?
Yeah.
What? Yeah, nothing.
What? I can't eat eggs. I'm intolerant.
Yeah, that's probably more likely.
So, I guess the terminology now would be like nerd, geek.
So, nerd man.
Yeah.
Christ, we're in trouble. Yeah.
So yeah, he's basically just a I wouldn't say genius. He's just like a scientist dude who was an enemy of Ant-Man, and in some of his, I was going to say most memorable moments, but probably overselling it.
Yeah.
He would use similar technology to Ant-Man to talk to ants and make them not like Ant-Man and be loyal to him. And this is actually genuinely one of the original plots. We were trying to like make the ants loyal to him rather than Hank Pym, the original Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Ooh. They did actually throw in some egg-related paraphernalia.
Okay.
So, while he didn't have any powers, he did have weapons which were egg-shaped. So, an egg which exploded, so like exploding grenade eggs.
Literally a grenade or literally just an egg?
Yeah, well, I'd like to think it was actually a grenade just painted white, perhaps, and just thought, this is an egg!
Close enough.
Yeah. Electrocution eggs, obviously. Basically, you know, he could ensnare people with an egg that would explode, like wrap them up in a bola or like a not Ebola, but a bolo. Is it bolo?
Yeah, bolo. Yeah.
Like yeah.
None of that seems particularly sciencey, though. It's a grenade and an age-old weapon.
But he's designed stuff. So he'll design. And this is like classic 60s style mad scientist crap. So he had like, you know, robots and mind control devices and it's all kind of a bit, it is like mad scientist.
I like the idea that someone invents a teleporting machine, you first retort with like, thanks, egghead.
Yeah.
What a cool robot.
Yeah.
dork. God, the 60s were brutal.
They were brutal. They tried to kind of make them a bit more credible, the characters like Egghead. There was loads of them around that era. So you had the mad thinker who thought a lot and was a bit of a but I remember, actually, I quite liked him in the 80s, because I think when I was reading comics in the 80s, I think he was a Spider-Man villain at that time.
Right.
So basically he was in prison and he would be thinking, which I'm really not selling it anyway.
Mm.
But basically he was like this kind of real evil genius, and so he could like, you know, create devices and defeat Spider-Man from prison. And as a kid, I thought that was quite cool. The idea that, you know, this villain could, you know, could be defeating you, but still be locked up. And it's like, because using his things he'd already set up. So I think with the Mad Thinker, he was always thinking one step ahead. So even though he's banged up, he'd have like a backup plan. And so
like that.
So that was quite cool. Yeah, so he was.
It's a different league.
Yeah, semi-lame, but not quite as lame. So they got all these kind of mad scientist characters and created a group called the Intelligentsia.
Oh, Christ.
This is fairly recently, so they tried to give them a bit more credibility and have them behind some of the biggest schemes that were going on in the Marvel Universe, kind of retroactively making them less shit, which I don't think particularly worked.
No.
Some of them are kind of carried on, but Egghead's kind of, he's the one I think everyone's kind of had a real problem with, trying to make him not look crap.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing you can do. Yeah. He just as well could be an amalgamation of any of those characters.
Yeah, it's just not memorable. But like I said, the reason we're talking about him is because he was a classic era Ant-Man villain, and we want to talk about Ant-Man later. So I thought that was the reason I pulled him out.
He's literally just the villain because he's intelligent and his head is slightly egg-shaped.
Yeah. And I find it a bit offensive, obviously, being a bit thinning on top. And it should look a little bit like me, actually, if I shave my hair off. But anyway, moving on.
good Halloween costume idea. Niche.
I need to kind of, actually, I'm not offended by it at all. I just think it's quite funny.
Who would you cast? Because obviously they're making all the Marvel movies now.
Top of my head.
Yeah.
John Malkovich.
John Malkovich is Eggman.
Head.
Egghead.
Or Eggman, actually.
How long would he last in a fight against the modern day Avengers?
2 seconds. But then saying that, I mean, they've kind of... I mean, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think, do a very good job of interpreting characters that could be lame.
Right.
So you've got, in the Captain America movies, you've got Arnim Zola,
right,
who, in the comics I remember, was basically a big TV with a face in it.
Right.
Because basically he was a Nazi scientist, but when he comes back to fight Captain America in the 70s, I think he was introduced, 60s, 70s, obviously everyone's carked it at that point. So he's basically downloaded his consciousness into this robot body, which looks like a giant TV with his face on it.
Mm.
So
that was the one in...
So he's actually in both Captain America movies. So he's the scientist dude in the original movie.
Helping out Red Skull.
Who helps out Red Skull. And then he appears as a computer voice in Winter Soldier.
In that hidden bunker thing. That was a really good bit.
Yeah, and if you remember like the Arnim Zola from the comics, it's quite a nice little nod that...
That's how they did it.
Yeah, and it didn't seem particularly lame. It's quite clever how he did it. And of course, again, we're probably not spoiling it. I'll probably assume that everyone's seen Winter Soldier, but Arnim Zola is the one who drops the plot twist at a key moment. So it's kind of like giving a lame character a nice little...
They could yet do this for Egghead. So
they could do it, and I think there's a possibility he could crop up. I mean, I'm pretty sure there'll be an Ant-Man 2. We'll talk about the movie in a moment, but I think there'll be an Ant-Man 2. And I think it'll be quite... One thing I didn't... I'm going to talk about the movie now, I've got to stop. We'll come back to that. I'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, I think they could do it. I don't think he's a major villain. I just think it's just a scientist dude.
So pretty much the grunt of the...
Yeah.
Of the Sisos.
The Sisos. I've started off easy. I've got a couple of blinders to talk about in future episodes.
Well, lest we not forget Egghead and the great work he did in the 60s.
Yeah.
Just basically being intelligent when back then it was cool to be... mean to nerds.
Exactly.
Nowadays, he'd be running Apple.
Yep.
And we'd all be worshipping him.
Yep. Stan Lee called that one wrong, didn't he?
Yep. Good one, Stan.
Oh, crap. It's going all right so far.
Let's see how it's all edited together. Right.
So.
Let's return to Stu's stash, which I always envisaged having a sort of Wayne's World style intro music.
Stu's stash. Stu Stash!
I'll just loop that.
It's comic time! It's excellent!
You have a lovely singing voice.
Is that alright?
Yeah. It's a lovely, lovely voice.
Lovely voice.
Alright, well, I'm assuming for this debut issue of BAM Comics that there could only really be one thing, and as I can see them in front of your head, tell the lovely...
So, I guess, with the Ant-Man movie doing the rounds at the moment, we are looking at doing a sort of an Ant-Man-esque themed episode for our first one. So I've got in front of me now the first two appearances of Scott Lang as Ant-Man.
Jeez.
Bing, bing, bing. Scott Lang is the second Ant-Man from the Marvel Universe. The first one was Hank Pym. The movie kind of goes into details as to why there are two.
I was going to say, let's not antique roadshow this.
Yes.
Let's go in straight away of how much these comics are worth.
I'm not sure.
This isn't like the first ever issue of Ant-Man, because that was the Hank Pym ones.
Well, Hank, I'm actually going to check on Google.
He's literally
Lord.
Good. Sorry, let them be.
So I'm pretty sure Ant-Man first appeared in Avengers issue 1. So, no, I was wrong. So right. This is why I checked. So basically, Ant-Man first appeared in Tales to Astonish, issue 27 in January 62. Yeah, so that's basically Hank-Man. Hank-Man?
Hank-Man.
That's good. Hank Pym discovering a substance that could turn him into the size of an ant.
Yeah.
It was a sort of the basic summary of that. And then he ended up rucking up as a founding member of the Avengers with the Wasp.
Right.
So, yeah, it's obviously for old school fans, it's quite nice to finally see a movie that nods to that since he was a founding member of the Avengers.
Hmm.
So, these comics are from 1979. How old were you then, Neil?
I wasn't even a wink in the milkman's eye.
God's sake. I was about 5 or 6.
Right.
Jesus.
So I noticed on the front they have the princely sum of 12 pence per issue.
Yes, and you're asking how much that is actually worth now, aren't you?
Yeah.
So when I've gone through a phase where I'm buying stuff from my youth, which is probably a midlife crisis, I'm sure.
That's pretty much how I imagine the Fight Club 2 arc to end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Buying loads of comics.
Yeah.
Investing for offspring you haven't got.
Yeah.
Jesus. Right, okay. So I got these for about both issues. So it's issue 47 and issue 48 of Marvel Premiere, which is the first Scott Lang Ant-Man storyline.
Yeah.
Picked both of these up for around, I think, about 50 quid all in.
50 quid for both issues.
Yeah, which is about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
In anticipation, they'll probably shoot up in value. So the value of them kind of fluctuates. If they're in really, really good condition, I think the highest they've ever gone for is about $600, I think.
Crumbs.
But that'll be, you know, as new condition. So yeah, you know, but... Yeah.
So you're holding there roughly about £1,000. Or $1,000, certainly.
Well, I mean, it's... the first one's probably about 600. The second one, it's like about $100, I think.
Okay.
So I'd say about, I've probably got 600 quid's worth in my hand here.
You're touching them with your acidic
Now kind of been
fingers.
A bit nervous.
Yeah, I can see the sweat.
Yeah, but yeah, I haven't bought it to kind of flog it. I kind of bought it.
To what, hang on the wall?
Hang on the wall. Yeah, I have done that. So we can talk about the comic if you want. I don't know.
Tell me about this... £500 comic hold in your hands.
I wouldn't say it's probably worth that content wise. I mean, this is like, we're looking at like 1979, so you know, this is like generic comic book stuff where it's all overwrought and overwritten and you know, loads of thought bubbles, which is something you don't really see these days.
Mm.
So it's the language of it's very dated. But at the time, this is stuff I loved as a kid, you know, just kind of like really fired my imagination.
Mm.
It's drawn by John Byrne, who was one of my favourite artists growing up. Who arguably was the artist on the most influential run of X-Men comics back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
He reinvented the Fantastic Four. Again, an era that I was really particularly fond of during the mid-80s. This is one of his earliest works, actually, when he was a jobbing freelance artist.
And did you read this first time round then? Is this one you actually had?
I didn't have this particular issue. I had read it. I think I'd read like a UK reprint.
Oh, okay.
Which would have been in black and white.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, the UK Marvel comics were all black and white. So I guess colour printing.
Too much to waste on comics.
Yeah, pretty much. The story setup is you've got Scott Lang, who's a bit of a thief. But a good guy, really.
Yeah.
He's looking to... help his daughter. It's where it differs from the movie. In this comic book setup, his daughter's got some kind of illness and he needs to get some cash. So he ends up breaking into a place to, you know, burglarize it.
Yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah, and ends up stealing an Ant-Man costume because he's broken into Hank Pym's gaff.
Oh, the little minx.
Yeah, and then he ends up... then hilarity ensues.
Essentially.
Pretty much he ends up... becoming the hero we never knew we needed. And taking on an evil guy called Darren Cross, who is in the movie, who's played by Corey Stoll, who, in another succession of Marvel villains in the movies, is just a guy in a suit.
I guess. So a bit of an egghead there.
Yeah, but in this, in the comic version of him, he's kind of like... well, I'll show you. That's what he looks like. He looks like the Hulk, but like a pink Hulk. So he looks like a big penis, basically.
I was not expecting that. I was going to go with a big baby.
Okay.
But you went
I saw
a
penis, so that probably said a lot about what I... Anyway, yeah.
When you look at a massive pink man, your first thought is...
Penis.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm learning so much. So much that I didn't expect to learn from this feature.
Exactly. So this is... I don't think he even has a name in this. So he's just Darren Cross, who turns into a big baby.
Big penis. Yeah.
Basically, so he ends up defeating him and, becoming a hero. And then Hank Pym goes, "Hey, kid, you stole my suit, but you know what? You can have it."
Wow.
So that's how...
So pretty much the DNA of the movie, what we're going to talk about.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much.
Which we've pretty much talked about already. We can, in here.
Yeah, so we can kind of segue into that. So I kind of pulled those out. It's kind of themed.
That's cool.
Marvel have reprinted this. They've just done a book collection
at
the time of the movie. They've included those two issues in it, as well as other appearances of Scott Lang, who's had a checkered history, actually, in the comics. I mean, about 5-6 years ago, they killed him off quite dramatically. He got blown up.
Bloody hell.
And then came back again because it's comics. No one ever really dies forever. Yeah. So yeah, should we segue into the movie?
Well, there is that. I just want to know now, to round this off, would you part with these comics? And if so, what would be your asking price?
Oh, I don't know. I think...
If I was to knock on your door wearing a raincoat for some reason...
I like the way you say that, as if you've never done that before.
If I had a suitcase full of British doubloons, and I was like, "I want those comics," how much silver would have to cross your palm?
A few hundred, I guess.
You paid 50 quid for them, and you're going to charge me...
Well, if it's you, I do your mates' rates.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
200 and a hand job? I don't know.
Jesus. Right, so... So if it wasn't mates, right, then if I was literally stranger...
Fair enough. I'll check the value of them and I'll probably say like a few hundred, I think, based on what it's worth now. They are in good condition. Okay. My greasy palms are now being all over them.
Well, there is that, but hopefully whoever buys them won't listen to this.
Yeah, I don't know, but I feel... I don't know.
I can see the conflict.
Yeah, it's kind of... I quite like having some of these.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You want to hold on to them for a bit?
I think so. I think because I've been collecting for years and there are plenty of comics I got rid of when I was younger, which I'm now like...
You hate yourself.
Yeah. I had like the first appearance of Venom, I got for like 25p when it first came out. I had it for years. And for whatever reason, I kind of traded stuff in. And now, you look at the values on that now, it's like...
It's worth several pounds.
Several pounds. Like, I think it's like 150, 200 quid at one point. I even had like First Deadpool, who... As a character, I think he's crap. I never liked Deadpool.
Yeah, let's get that out there now. Deadpool is probably the most awful character.
I think that's something we could talk about on another one. So I had the first appearance of Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
Got rid of it. Now it's like pretty hard to get hold of.
Smelly nerds would pay you all of their mum and dad's dowry.
Yeah, and the weird thing is, like the people who I see at like MCM... dressed as Deadpool. I say weird. For me, it's an age thing. It's just like, I just find it baffling and... Well, it is weird. Because like, they weren't even born when Deadpool was created. I bought that comic when I was at school.
Mm.
And it's kind of odd now to see this character who, at the time, didn't make a splash.
Yeah, no.
No one really gave a shit about Deadpool at the time. He's now this kind of iconic, everyone's dressed as Deadpool at comic conventions.
I fucking hate Deadpool. Yeah. All right, okay, let us move on to, we've danced around this topic for the past half hour. Talk to me about the Ant-Man movie, what we saw together.
We did. It's the latest Marvel Cinematic Universe motion picture.
I am going to go as far as to say latest and greatest.
Yeah, you said that at the time, but that was a ballsy statement. We actually said that as we were walking down the steps at the cinema.
I like to think of myself as a ballsy man, and that has been my favourite Marvel movie thus far.
Okay. I think it was a refreshing Oh, I'm going to use a phrase that I hate. I'm going to say it anyway. It was a refreshing palate cleanser.
Oh, crumbs.
Which if I ever say again, you have permission to punch me in the face. After Avengers Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Which I really liked.
Yeah.
I watched it again on the plane last week, actually, because I remember the last hour of it just being relentless and coming out thinking, I really enjoyed it, but I can't remember what happened. Everything was happening at once. There was loads of explosions and
people
and stuff. So yeah, it was a bit of a mindfuck. So watching Ant-Man was like a nice formulaic, I think. It was like, you know, your superhero origin movie. There were no real surprises, but what they did very, very well. It's very clever, very stylistic, funny. I think it was very funny. Some nice comedic performances.
Yeah, I think that was the crux of it. The comedic performances and stylish, like you say. There's going to be... there's been so much made of the fact that Edgar Wright was originally heavily involved.
Yeah.
But I don't think it suffered for his departure. I mean, there was obvious DNA in there.
Yeah.
But as we've discussed off air, like I completely miscalled the bits that he'd had him put in. And
well, that's the funny thing, isn't it? The bits that people think are very Edgar Wright.
Mm.
It turns out, if you read interviews, that they're the bits that weren't Edgar Wright at all. They were added in at a later date.
Yeah, I think too much is made of it. I mean, you've got to give credit to Rudd and the director. That it's been
Peyton Reed, I think. Yeah.
Mm, it's been a great palate cleanser, if you will, Stu.
Oh, see, that's gonna catch on, hasn't it?
What did you make of having the two Ant-Men?
I thought it was good. I was expecting a lot more of like the flashback stuff.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be one of those dicks. I think in the Edgar Wright version, there was going to be more of that. I think.
Mm.
But that's fine. You know, the Ant-Man movie we've got is brilliant. As opposed to the movie that never happened, that people seem to think was better, that was never actually made. But anyway.
Yeah, there is that, isn't there? Yeah,
it's like, oh, Edgar Wright's Ant-Man was so much better.
Not really. No, because it doesn't exist. Yeah.
We liked a bit more of the flashback to, I was going to say the 60s, but they've kind of retconned it. So Hank Pym's era was the 80s, I think. So he's still in the Cold War. You get a little taste of him in action in the 80s, which I thought was quite a nice touch. And I kind of would have liked more of it. But I get that probably would have distracted from the modern plot line. There's always a sequel, I'm presuming. There's always a sequel.
Yeah, I'd hope so. I don't see any reason why there wouldn't be. And certainly, hope he crops up in, an Avengers film.
Well, he's definitely going to be in Captain America, Civil War.
You're giving me your Stu guarantee on that.
Well, yeah, that's not... Is that a spoiler? I think it's already known that he's
I'm sorry, we can't spoil the film. Not if it's been out for...
No, but fuck it. Okay, well, the post. You got two post credit scenes.
Yeah,
one.
God, if you haven't seen it yet, turn it off as quickly as possible.
If you're still here, it's your own bloody fault.
Yeah.
So the first one is basically setting up that the Wasp will appear as a character.
It's good.
It's good. A lot of people got excited about it, going, "Oh, finally, Marvel are doing a female character," which is great. But it's like, yeah, but. All they said they're going to do it, but it's still going to be years before we get it.
Mm.
So that's probably a criticism I'd say. Marvel are a bit slow on that one. And the final credit is literally a scene from the still filming Captain America Civil War.
Mm.
We won't have to go into detail, but basically it's definitely saying that Ant-Man's going to be in Civil War.
Yeah.
And I guess he'll be in the future Avengers movies. And I think it's an inevitable sequel, but they haven't announced it yet.
That would be nice. I would like to see one.
Yeah.
I really liked it. I probably haven't enjoyed it. I really liked the original Iron Man.
Yeah.
It kind of felt like that to me.
Yeah.
Like, we keep going back to palate cleanser, but it was refreshing as Iron Man was first refreshing.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think, up to that point, superhero movies were very po-faced.
Yeah. So back to laughs.
Yes, so Ant-Man. Ant-Man was funny. If you haven't seen the trailer, it's going to be even funnier. I think the trailer does give away a couple of the real good visual gags, which is part and parcel of what you get with trailers these days.
Not a strong villain.
No, I think the problem with this movie and a lot of the Marvel movies of late is the lack of compelling villains.
Mm.
I think I actually liked Ultron. I thought that worked. I had my reservations, but I think having that kind of sense of humour behind it, where basically he was an AI version of Tony Stark, but yeah. even more of a dick, so you could have that kind of quips and stuff, which worked really well. I thought it was very good. I like that.
I got a sense of real threat.
Yeah.
Which was good.
Yeah, escalating threat. I think the problem we had with Ant-Man and with even going back to the original Iron Man, there's a template where they have like a big businessman villain. So you had Obadiah Stane, played by Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, he was good.
And you've got Darren Cross in this one, played by Corey Stoll. Whoever we had, Iron Man 3 was...
Guy Pearce's
character. So, they're all kind of like these bland, I'm a villain, I've got money, I'm going to create some kind of weird supervillainy type thing or whatever. And I'm evil because I'm evil. And that, to me, it's a bit... Again, that kind of goes back to comic book 101, Hollywood formulaic villain. But Marvel have a record of doing really good villains. I know we're both fans of the Netflix Daredevil series.
Yep.
So, for me... Wilson Fisk in that is the best villain the Marvel cinematic TV universe have done.
Ever.
They had the luxury of time to develop that, I guess, as well. It's harder to do that in a 2-hour movie. But then they did it with Ultron. Ultron worked.
You're saying that John Travolta in the Punisher movie, not quite the same league.
That's a good movie. I like that movie.
I like it, but for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah,
Have they ever come out and said that this is where the Marvel Universe starts?
No, they're saying that Iron Man is where it starts.
I mean, that's agreeable. But I just don't know, is anything before that actually count?
Of course, the most memorable Marvel movie, of course, is Loki. So that's...
That's a great villain.
Yeah, so basically, massive lore fan base... different layers to him, but again, you've had the luxury of developing over a course of movies.
Yeah, I just think Ant-Man just needed maybe 5-10 minutes more run time, and you could have built up a good villain from that. Like, they alluded to, like, the more you use the shrinking technology, the more it messes with you. Yeah, so there was a bit of that going on, but they never really went into it. It was just a businessman decided to sell stuff to Hydra.
And I can't remember the bit where because it literally was him... being like, I'm evil, I'm going to sell stuff to Hydra. And then it was suddenly he was in the suit. And unless I kind of had a blackout, I don't remember the bit in between where he went, you know what, I'm going to go full-on villain badass. Screw you guys! So it felt like there was something missing there.
Yeah.
But I think it's also part of me just thinks people are going, well, you know he's a villain. Let's not dick about.
Yeah, maybe a bit of that.
It's like, here's a fight in miniature world. Woo! Not that it's called that. I think it's really good. I still think Winter Soldier is the best one they've done out of the bunch.
That's fair.
Although that also suffers from bland, business-suited villain syndrome a little bit.
God, I really had to struggle there to remember who the actual villain was the Winter Soldier himself.
Is he the villain? Winter Soldier, is he the villain?
It was the least exciting part of it.
Yeah. But, I love Winter Soldier. It was so, so good. And it was such a clever way of kind of redefining a superhero movie or what you expect from a superhero movie.
Yeah, very much so. I think you described it as just an espionage film set in a superhero world.
It is. It's like proper, like, 70s style, conspiracy-type movie.
I'm kind of excited that they've got Crossbones to play with now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's potentially a good villain. Not that there was anything wrong with Red Skull.
No, I'd love to see Red Skull back. And I kind of thought he would crop up in Winter Soldier. But that didn't happen.
Do you think they've killed him off for good? Do you reckon Red Skull will come back?
I don't know. I think they've got... Even though there's a kind of feeling that, every time you... flick on to see what's on the cinema, it's always a Marvel movie. There's only a limited number, really. We're getting like a couple a year. So there's a kind of limit on to what you can do, and they obviously want to introduce new characters, so I'm kind of can't really see how they can fit him in. I mean, they could probably bung him into the Infinity War movies coming up. I just
bung him in.
That's the whole thing. I'm concerned about whether that's going to be the end of it, or it's going to become
too far.
Because we're going to have all the Avengers, all the new characters coming up, like Ant-Man, who's going to be in it. We're going to have Black Panther, Captain Marvel, Guardians of the Galaxy going to be in it as well, Doctor Strange. Apparently the TV characters could be in it, so you'd have like Daredevil, Power Man, Iron Fist, Jessica Jones. And it's, even though it's two movies, I'm like,
maybe just a bit too much.
You can do it as a TV series. I mean, Game of Thrones is a masterclass on having a gazillion characters and having it work. But yeah, every episode of Game of Thrones, you're getting like 5 minutes with a set of characters, then it's on to the next.
But it works.
But for movies, you know, I don't know.
We'll see. Well, I think we managed to talk about Ant-Man through the entirety of this podcast, so I don't think we have to retread too much over the movie.
No.
Other than to say, we enjoyed it. I think it's the best Marvel have done since Iron Man, and you're quite happy with it as well.
Yeah,
quite. So there we go. You've all seen it by now. You wouldn't be listening to this and haven't seen Ant-Man by now. Come on.
Fools if you haven't.
Fools if you haven't.
It's like, oh, they've ruined it for me now. Apparently he turned into an ant. It's fucking rubbish.
Good impression.
Yeah.
Thanks. So that's all the time we have for the first episode of BAM!
BAM!
BAM Comics.
BAM!
You'll all be seeing it. It'll all be on t-shirts soon. If you want to find us on Twitter, I am Neil Gortz. And you are
Stoonami.
Two O's.
Yeah, STOONANAMI.
There we go. So find us on Twitter, say hello, rate and review the show. It all helps. Give us some feedback as well. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
And we will see you next time with more comics.
And just general bollocks, really.
General bollocks. Yeah. That's a sinister society of stupid villain if ever there was one. All right, see you next time for more comics and bollocks.
Bye.
Bye.